Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Coming up in this hour, true history. Later on, a one-man performance on the Globe Theater from 1945. But first, it's Then and Now, the first episode in a series from CBS, sponsored by Sears, from September 17, 1936, an amalgam of great moments in history with some of Hollywood's biggest stars.
Ladies and gentlemen of America, tonight, Sears Roebuck and Company celebrates its 50th anniversary by presenting the first of a new series of programs dedicated to you, the people of America.
Then and Now. A panorama of American destiny. A review of the past 50 years through which Sears Roebuck and Company has proudly grown up with America. Each week, Then and Now, we'll recreate for you in music, in drama, in song, the unforgettable events of the past half century. Each week, famous motion picture stars, composers, singers, the world's greatest talent will be brought into your home by Sears Roebuck and Company, the store where all America shops. Sears Roebuck and Company is proud to present on tonight's premier broadcast,
Mr. Robert Montgomery, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer star, Miss Constance Bennett of 20th Century Fox, Mr. Fred Stone, beloved idol of Broadway, Miss Paula Stone, Hollywood's new starlet, Mr. Walter Hampden, dean of the American Theater, and tonight, for the first time on the air, a dramatization from the novel, which is thrilling hundreds of thousands of Americans, Gone with the Wind.
America saw two miracles that year. One was the Statue of Liberty, which France sent us for our 100th birthday. The other was the electric light, a young inventor by the name of Edison, installed in the uplifted hand of the Goddess of Liberty. Let us look back into the life of this man of destiny to whom America and the world owe so much.
Mr. Walter Hampden plays the role of Thomas Alva Edison.
In his dim-lit laboratory stands the genius Thomas Edison. He's in his early 30s. Permanently deaf as the result of a beating received when a small boy. His assistant, John Croisi, enters the laboratory as Edison busily tinkers with a curious-looking machine.
What is it you are working on now, Mr. Edison?
Just a minute, John. Now, let me see.
In foil over a little drum, little tube, parchment diaphragm,
a steel needle. Curious looking, isn't it? I think I've got it, though, this time.
What in heaven's name is it, Mr. Edison?
I can't hear you. I'm not looking at you, John.
But,
If you want to know what it is, I'll tell you. It's something I've been working on in secret for a long time. It's a small prison.
Prison?
That's right. For locking up the human voice and preserving it for posterity.
I don't get you, sir.
Go on. Tell me this is impractical, too. This is a little device that's going to talk.
Oh, but such a thing is not practical, sir. A table can't talk.
There are lots of things you don't believe possible, John. You know, for instance, that in this chair here is enough energy to run a whole factory? Can you tell me what makes the little animal called man go round, eh? What's the secret of life? Who knows it, Croisi? You? Me? No one. That's why it's so fascinating. Do you realize what it will mean to the world if we can capture the human voice and keep it in a little box and have it talk whenever we want it to? Do you realize what that will mean? Don't think anything is impossible, Croisi. Now, just one more tightening of this little bolt. There, I'm ready, John. Watch me. I turn this little shaft here, and I talk. Mary had a little lamb. Its fleece was white as snow. And everywhere that Mary went, that lamb was sure to go. Now let's see whether all my effort has gone for naught. I turn the shaft backward to the starting point, adjust the tube, and once more turn the handle. Doesn't work. I guess you're right, Croisy. It's impractical. I guess you can't harness sound.
Oh, but, Mr. Edison, it does work. I heard it. Just what you said into it. The same words, the same things. It talked.
You are not lying to me, Croisy.
Oh.
I heard nothing.
Oh, no, Mr. Edison. I would never lie to you.
You really heard it? The same words?
Yes, sir, the same words.
How do I sound, John?
Oh, wonderful, sir. That machine is a success. The most amazing, the most wonderful thing that has ever been created, sir.
Ah, no, Croisy. More amazing and wonderful is the thing God created. Man.
Immortal Thomas Edison, the deaf man who made a machine talk, the genius who gave the world light, the wizard who performed incredible miracles, Thomas Edison, whose dreams have profoundly affected the destiny of the world.
The 90s.
The K-90s, when bicycles were built for two. There were no movies in those days, but there were minstrel shows. It is late evening in the spring of 1896. Creaking along a dirt road in Louisiana are the red and gold wagons of the McIntyre and Heath Minstrels. Their destination is the little village of Old Town, just over the next rise. Atop the lead wagon sits Joe Hayden, a member of the company, Theodore Metz, conductor of the minstrel band, and Jim McIntyre.
Well, boys, we're coming into Old Town soon. I wish you boys would have that song ready so we could introduce it at tomorrow night's opening.
Have it ready, all right, Mac.
Yeah.
Don't you worry about that. It's the title that's worrying us.
Well, we'll call it the song without a title, if necessary.
Well, I don't know.
That
you
wouldn't
can't
be
do
so
that
good.
Very much.
No. Say, look down there in the valley. Do you see it?
What is it?
Why, it's a fire. Part of the town is on fire.
Well, there'll be a hot time in Old Town tonight, all right.
My goodness, Mac, that's it. That is it.
What's it? Have you gone crazy?
The title, Mac. You have given us the title.
What title?
Hot Time in the Old Town Tonight.
When you hear them bells go ding-ling-ling, all join round and sweetly you must sing. And when the verse am through and the chorus all join in, there'll be a hot time in the Old Town tonight.
Here it began. An obscure little town in Louisiana was the first to throb to the catchy and tuneful notes of Hot Time in the Old Town. For 2 years, the minstrels toured the country singing it, popularizing it wherever they went. But it needed the sudden shock of a tragic event to lift this song to its place in the pattern of America's destiny.
U.S. Naval Base reporting. The United States battleship Maine was blown up in Havana Harbor last night. The circumstances of the explosion are extremely mysterious, and the government has ordered an immediate...
The blue-shirted volunteers of 98 marched off to Cuba to the tune of Hot Time in the Old Town. They whistled it in their jungle camps. They sang it as they charged up San Juan Hill. They made it the song of the Spanish-American War.
All going round,
1904.
The eyes of America turned toward the St. Louis Exposition in celebration of the 100th anniversary of the Louisiana Purchase. Thousands upon thousands of people crammed their way into the fairgrounds that hot summer, eager to see how far America had come.
Ladies and gentlemen, before you is the famous Winton automobile, holder of the world's long-distance record of over 1,000 miles.
Yes, me, tain't practical.
One moment, old-timer. Eh? This car drove all the way from New York just to come to the exposition.
Yeah, I'll bet the horse got tired pulling it.
In spite of the derision which greeted the automobile in 1904, it is indeed here to stay. And its coming developed an industry which was to be gigantic even among the colossal industrial combinations of those early 1900s. This was an age of leisurely living, of a cold bottle and a bird, picture hats and hobble skirts, when the haunting waltzes of the Castle House Orchestra gave way to the toe-tickling rhythms of ragtime. The tempo quickened. Life was gay, carefree. The world danced the turkey trot on the edge of... Within 3 short years, America came of age. The World War.
Come in.
Mrs. Alice Gresham?
Yes?
A telegram.
Oh, I don't have my glasses with me. Would you mind reading it, son?
Yeah, sure. It's from the Secretary of War.
Yes?
Well, he says, regret to inform you that your son, Ben Gresham, was the first American soldier to be killed in the World War. I deeply sympathize with you. Great hour of freedom.
The Jazz Age. Post-war frenzy. Crossword puzzles. Rudolph Valentino. Bell-bottom trousers. King Tut. The Channel Swimmers. Speakeasies. Radio. And out of the restless moil of 20th century turbulence came the story of a beautiful friendship and a heartrending tragedy.
Doctors can't tell how Daddy is yet, Bill. We're hoping for the best.
Listen, how about this show of his three cheers? I read in the paper that they're going to call the whole thing off.
That's what was decided last night, Bill.
Well, you tell those birds in New York that I'm going to fly in from California to pinch hit until Fred gets well. Tell him... Might not dance as funny, but I can sing as loud as Fred. And you tell Fred not to take it so hard, cause shucks, he'll be up and dancing again no time.
Thanks, Bill. I will.
The nation thrilled as Will Rogers rushed to New York to fill in for his injured friend. America loved Will Rogers as it never loved anyone else. America was unprepared for that tragic summer day when Will Rogers flew off to a final landing.
This is Fred Stone speaking, friend. This is Will Rogers' spot, but nobody can pinch hit for Will Rogers. For if Will was here, he'd be on this program. The panorama of the America of the last 50 years just has to include Will. It was you, Will, who gave America an inspiration she never had known before. Your philosophy, your thinking, your little homespun sayings were bred in the soil of this nation. You were America, Will, and you were my friend. so I know you will understand about me taking your spot tonight. They didn't know of anyone else to get. And I wanted so much to do it for you, to return a beautiful favor. So if you'll let my daughter Paula and me go on for you, Bill. In dear old New York, it's remarkable, Barry. The names on the lamppost is unnecessary. You merely have to see the girls to know what street you're on. Fifth Avenue beauties and dear old Broadway girls, at tailor-made shoppers, the Avenue A girls. They're strictly all right, but they're different quite in the different parts of town.
In old New York, in old New York, the peach crops always fine. They're gay and fair, and on the square, the men of Manhattan for mine. You cannot see in gay Paris, in London or in Cork, the men you'll meet on any street in old.
Dance it, Paula.
Yankee Stadium in New York City, where 40,000 rabid fight fans gathered to witness the Jim Maloney-Jack Sharkey fight, the winner of which was to meet Jack Dempsey.
Sharkey just pounded Maloney's face with a series of hard rights and lefts, and he's backing Maloney into a corner and is belting away with 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, just like that. It looks as though, there goes the bell ending the round. Believe you me, folks, wait a minute, ladies and gentlemen. Joe Humphries has just stepped into the ring. This is very unusual for Joe. He's going to make an announcement in the midst of this fight.
Ladies and gentlemen, quiet, please. We just received a wireless report that a young man just took off in an airplane across the ocean alone. He's now somewhere over the open sea, and his name here is Charlie Lindbergh. Now I'm going to ask you, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't mind, and I don't think the two fighters will either, let's all be quiet for 1 minute and sort of give the boy a helping prayer. And those of you who forgot how, just be quiet anyway.
Twenty hours later, the Lone Eagle dropped out of the French sky to a memorable landing in Paris and placed his name beside those of Columbus, Magellan, Parry, and Byrd. And today, what interests America? What people fascinate her? What books thrill her? What is America thinking?
A more sober, more reflective America. Read such historical novels as Gone with the Wind by Margaret Mitchell, a scene from which is dramatized for the first time on the air with Miss Constance Bennett as Scarlett O'Hara and Mr. Robert Montgomery as Rhett Butler.
Gone with the Wind, story of Scarlett O'Hara, daughter of a South whose traditions have been shattered by the Civil War. Scarlett O'Hara, coquette, vixen, ready to recruit every feminine wile to achieve her personal pleasures and stability, who married a man she did not love, though fascinated by Rhett Butler, charming scoundrel and blockade runner. Then her husband is killed. On the evening of his burial, Scarlett sits alone in her room, alone with herself, rationalizing as her brain insists on tormenting her.
Once it's quiet in the house. Not even any quarreling with Peter or Mammy or Cookie. Nothing. And all because Frank is lying in his grave, and I killed him. No, I mustn't say that. But he did go out in the night for me. He was caught in that raid and shot. God will punish me for that. God will punish me for marrying Frank when he really loved Sue Ellen. I made him very unhappy and abhorred like a gentleman. But I really didn't make him entirely unhappy. I gave him our child, Ella. Oh, Frank, if you're only alive now, I could make up for it all. If I could only find someone who would let me put my head on his shoulder and cry. I wouldn't see Frank's face. That hurt, look. I wouldn't see it anymore.
Aunt Biddy, I want to talk with Scarlett.
But the child is lying down now, Captain Butler. He's right prostrated.
She'll see me. You tell her I'm going away tomorrow. Tell her it's terribly important.
Red, I'll be down directly. Must put some rouge on. No, I guess I better not. Aunt Pity would be shocked. I'm coming down, Red.
Forgive me for disturbing you, Scarlett. I'm sorry I couldn't be at Frank's funeral.
I understand.
Will you pardon us, Aunt Pity?
Oh, certainly. I'll close the door as I go out.
Why'd you come, Red?
I wanted to find out.
Find out what?
What the matter with you is.
You're a real callous person, Red. You're like me.
Come on, honey, what is it? Isn't it more than just old Frank dying?
Oh, Red, I'm so afraid. I'm afraid I'll die and go to hell.
You're pretty healthy, and maybe there isn't any hell.
But there is, Red. You know there is.
I know there is, but it's right here on Earth.
Well, I oughtn't to have married Frank. It was wrong. He was Sue Ellen's beau, and he loved her, not me. But I lied to him. I told him she was going to marry someone else. How could I have done it, Red?
Well, that's how you got Frank. I always wondered.
I made him do all sorts of things he didn't want to do. I was so mean to him. But I'm not really mean. My mother always said that I...
Your mother? I've often wondered what your mother was like.
Oh, Red. For the first time, I'm glad she's dead so she can't see me. She didn't raise me to be mean, Red. She'd rather I'd have starved than do this. And I so wanted to be like her in every way. And I'm not like her a bit. Not a bit. Mother died right after the Yankees went through. Red, you can't imagine. I get all cold when I think of it. I can see how everything is burned and still, and there's nothing to eat. No. Oh, Red, in my dreams, I'm hungry again.
Go on.
I'm hungry, and my mind keeps saying, if I ever get out of this, I'll never, never be hungry again. And then the dream goes off into a gray mist, and I'm running so hard, my heart's about to burst, and something is chasing me, and I can't breathe, but I keep thinking, if I can just get there, I'll be safe. But I don't know where I'm trying to get to.
Honey, let's get to the bottom of this. You say if you had it to do over again, you'd do it differently. But would you? Think now, would you?
Oh, I don't know. It's all so mixed up.
Why don't you tell me the truth? Hasn't your conscience bothered you before this?
I didn't think much about conscience before. I guess I just reckoned God would understand.
But you don't credit God with understanding why you married Frank.
Red, how can you talk about God so when you don't even believe there is
you
one?
You believe in a God of wrath, and that's what's important at the moment. I'm surprised at you, Scarlett, for sprouting a conscience this late in life. Opportunists like you shouldn't have them.
What's an opportunist?
A person who takes advantage of opportunities.
That wrong?
It's always been held in bad taste by those who had the same opportunities and didn't take them. Now, I'll tell you why I came here this evening.
Why?
I'm going away.
Where?
To England, and I've got news.
What news?
My news is this. I still want you more than any woman I've ever seen. And now that Frank is gone, I thought you'd be interested to know it.
Red Butler, you're the most ill-bred man in the world coming here at a time like this with Frank hardly cold in his grave. If you had any decency...
I'm afraid you missed my point.
I don't miss anything. Let go of me and get out of here.
Listen, I'm asking you to marry me. Would you be convinced if I knelt down?
Oh.
I've always intended having you, Scarlett, since the first day I saw you at 12 Oaks, when you threw a vase and swore just to prove to me you weren't a lady.
You look so calm, just as This is the pure disgust in the weather.
I bear my soul, and you're suspicious. I'm going away for a long time, and if I wait till I return, I'm afraid you have married someone else with money. So I thought, why not me and my money? Really, Scarlett, I can't go on all my life waiting to catch you between husbands.
I don't think I'll ever marry again.
Oh, yes, you will. You were born to be married.
But, Red, I don't love you.
That's no drawback. Your love never loved Frank. Did you ever think of marrying just for the fun of it?
Don't talk like a fool. There's no fun being married.
Oh, I don't know. Why not try marrying a fine young man who has a bad reputation and a way with women?
You're coarse and conceited, and this conversation has gone quite far now.
Come, Scarlett, say you'll marry me, or I'll stay around here and play a guitar under your window every night and sing at the top of my voice so you'll marry me to save your reputation.
But I don't want to marry anybody.
Scarlett O'Hara, you're a fool.
Oh, don't, Beth.
Scarlett.
Please.
Scarlett.
Let me go.
You're in my arms now. You're clinging to me as the only solid thing in the dizzy, swaying world. You've never felt like this before in your whole life.
Brett,
you've
please.
Had this coming to you for years. Some of the fools, none of the fools you've known have kissed you like this, have they?
Brett.
Gentlemen all, but what do they know about women? What do they know about you? I know you. Say yes, Scarlett. Say yes.
Yes.
You mean it? You don't want to take it back? Just why did you say yes? Look at me. Is it my money?
Why, Red, what a question.
Look up and don't try to sweet talk me.
You aren't in love with me, are you? Why should I be in love with you?
No. No, my dear. I'm not in love with you. No more than you are with me. And if I were, you'd be the last person I'd ever tell. God help the man who ever really loves you. You'd break his heart, my darling.
Red.
All right. Let me know if you change your mind.
Oh. Well, aren't you going to kiss me goodbye?
Don't you think you've had enough kissing for one evening? To think of a modest, well-brought-up young woman. Well, I told you it would be fun, didn't I?
Oh, you're just impossible. And I don't care if you never come back.
But I will come back. I will. And you'll wait until I do.
Yes.
Years ago, a man bought a watch. It was a good watch, better than he ever expected to own, and at a lower price than he ever expected to pay. The man who bought the watch was Louis Lindemann of North Redwood, Minnesota. And the man he bought it from was Richard W. Sears, founder of Sears Roebuck and Company.
Gone with the Wind, the forthcoming Selznick International production, was presented on tonight's broadcast by special permission of the Macmillan Company and Selznick International Pictures, the copyright owners. Robert Montgomery appeared by permission of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Constance Bennett with permission of 20th Century Fox. The song's Night in Manhattan is from the big broadcast of Paramount Picture. Varsity Drag from the production Good News.
Next Thursday at this same time, Sears invites you to go back through the years again and to meet their guest stars, Admiral Richard E. Byrd, Helen Gleason of the Metropolitan Opera, and the Abbey children, Patience, Richard, and John, authors of the best-selling Around the World in 11 Years.
Then and now, on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS episode from September 17, 1936. The moment we heard, with Robert Montgomery and Constance Bennett performing a scene from Gone with the Wind, would be the first and practically only time a scene from that sprawling motion picture was performed on radio. And although the Movies on Radio program, the Lux Radio Theater, could have done it, condensing such a long motion picture proved to be too much of a challenge for the program, so instead, in celebration of the film, which was released in 1939, the program offered a radio premium, which was a brooch worn by Scarlett or Vivian Leigh in the film. You're listening to an hour of true history on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Up next, the Theater of Romance from CBS, renamed the Globe Theater for the Armed Forces Radio Service version, we'll hear next. First broadcast on CBS on September 18, 1945. Joseph Cotten stars in the play One Life to Lose.
Here is your pass to the Globe Theater. Welcome to the Globe Theater, the radio theater playing exclusively to the men and women of the armed forces of the United Nations. Here for your entertainment are presented the finest plays selected from outstanding radio dramas. And here to tell you about tonight's play, in the absence of your regular host, Herbert Marshall, is Bill Johnstone.
Hello, everyone. Welcome again to the Globe Theater. Freedom is the heritage of all Americans. And in the recent global struggle, we learned how costly a prize freedom can be. Throughout the history of this country, there has been a constant struggle to preserve the American way of life. The hero of our play tonight was an outstanding fighter for freedom. His last words stand as an inspiration for all of us. I only regret that I have but one life to give to my country. Those were the words of Nathan Hale. Tonight, with Joseph Cotton as Nathan Hale, we present a theater of romance adaptation entitled One Life to Give.
He was as American as his birthplace, Coventry, Connecticut. He lived for a principle, freedom. One day, when he was 20, he died for it. He started that last day much as any other. He rose, washed, and then he walked over to the window and stood looking out at the stars a moment, watching them for what he knew was the last time. And suddenly his thoughts stung his eyes to tears, and he turned his back on the window and shut his heart against the stars. He moved over to the table, sat down, and he wrote three letters. First,
my dear mother, I had hoped to spend another hour with you before the last hour. But you know why that is impossible. A spy does not choose his death nor his hours. What does a man write at a time like this? What does he say? What is there to say but thank you? Thank you for the years you have given me. Thank you for the stories
I've Robin Hood was the bravest man in all England. He wore a suit of Sherwood green and his bow was slung across his shoulder. He was strongest of the strong and bravest of the brave. Now, one
thank day... Thank you for Robin Hood and King Arthur. For hours when the fire burned high and we roamed, you and I, across the mountains and the plains and the high seas of adventure. And thank you for nights on hilltops looking at the stars, asking questions of the universe. Thank you for stories dearer than you know. And thank you, too, for all the mornings of my life. Winter mornings with the snow sifting from the clouds. And the warm, friendly smell of breakfast, for spring mornings when I awoke to find the sun calling me out, the restless trees tapping against the window.
Wake up, son. It's Saturday, and the whole day is ahead of us. What would you say to a picnic?
Remember how, after we had eaten, I'd lie on my back in the tall grass watching the clouds, my eyes on castles. Thank you for those picnics, and for games and cakes and plans and dreams. Thank you for laughing with me and sometimes crying with me and for making me stand on my own 2 feet.
Mother, Mother, where are you?
Good gracious, son, your nose is all bloody. And what on earth has happened to your eye?
It got a fist in it.
Oh, it did it? And how did it happen to get a fist in it?
John Case hit me, and he took my lunchbox from me.
You let him?
Well, he's 2 years older than I am.
Son, I want you to go and get your lunchbox. Immediately. Go on now.
I came home minus a tooth, but John Case was minus three, and I had my lunchbox. Thank you for standing in a doorway creating memories, and thank you, too, for evenings. To this day, I remember the warm, comfortable feeling of my hand in yours and the Madonna look about you as you tucked in the covers. And thank you, too, for guideposts. And for the words that were those guideposts.
Son, I want to tell you something wonderful about your country that is like no other country in the world. It's a free country, and you are a free man. Or will be when you're grown.
What's so wonderful about that?
Oh, son, in other countries, you would be told how to worship and how to act and talk and even how to think. When you say, I am American, you are saying, I am a free man. I am an individual with great personal liberties. And when you say that, you must also say, I will cherish those liberties. I will guard them and keep them, the proud, shining things they are, no matter what the cost.
Wonderful words for a boy to grow up by. Words you had to measure up to, that set the level of patriotism and the worth of valor. So thank you for words and for ideals and for memories. Whatever is good within me, I owe to you. I wanted to say all these things the day I took my leave of you, but the words came harder then. We actually said so little, do you remember?
What is it, son? What are you trying to tell me?
Mother, I'm not going to do any more teaching for quite a while, not for the duration of the war anyhow.
What are your plans, dear?
I don't know definitely what they are, except that there's some information needed and I'm going after it.
Behind the enemy lines?
Yes.
I'll miss you very much.
It's something I must do.
I know. And since you have the courage to go, I must have the courage to let you go. When must you leave?
Tonight.
Tonight? We'd best hurry then. There isn't much time. There's so little time.
All day to pack and then a moment to hold you close and to say a quick goodbye.
God bless you. God bring you safely home.
And to go off down the road, feeling your eyes upon me, to turn and look back at the top of the hill, to wave for the last time and then go on alone. And only now do we know that that was the last hour and the final farewell. And so, above all else, thank you for teaching me how to live, because you taught me, by the same token, how to die. With all my love.
While we're waiting for the second act, let's listen to the music of Ethel Smith on the electric organ. Now we're ready for the second act of One Life to Give, starring Joseph Cotten.
He wrote three letters. The first was to his mother. The second was to a girl, a Miss Adams of Canterbury, Connecticut. He sat for a long time before he wrote. He sat for a long time.
Alice, my dearest, let me start by saying I love you above all women and will forever. My arms are very lonely for you tonight. My heart is suddenly most empty, for all the things I hold most sacred are being stripped from me. It is almost dawn, but I'm on the threshold of my longest night. I've been spending these last hours counting memories, reliving them. I remember the day we met. You were having some sort of party at your house, and you invited Walter Lamb, and he brought me along.
Alice, may I present a very good friend of mine?
I only needed to look into your eyes once to know that here was the beginning and the end of all things to me. I only needed to look once to think, of course. Now I know why I've been lonely sometimes. I was waiting for you. You know, I remember the very first word you ever said to me.
How do you do? I'm so glad to meet you.
Strange how little phrases can catch in your throat. how the loveliest memories become the most unbearable.
This is my father's picture, and that one is my mother when she was 17. That's her wedding dress. I plan to be married in it someday myself. That is, well, of course, I expect, well, that is, every girl...
I made up my mind on the spot to ask you to marry me. The days that followed were the happiest I shall ever know.
Oh, was there ever such a beautiful day anywhere?
No, not anywhere. Here, let me help you down.
Thank you.
There. Let's walk over to the edge of the cliff where we can watch the sea. What are you thinking at this exact moment?
I was thinking how good it is to be young and alive. What were you thinking?
I was thinking how good it is to be young and alive with you.
Am I to take it, sir, that you wish to marry Alice?
Yes, sir. I'll try to make more money and to advance myself.
Just a minute. Let me ask you a question, sir. Why did you decide to become a teacher?
Well, it's not easy to put into words without sounding like a pompous fool, but I wanted to teach because I think this next generation should understand why their grandfathers came to this country, what a store they set by human liberty, and what price we must pay to keep it at all costs. I believe that if we can teach our children the high value of liberty and honor, we will never lose either. I find it hard to put into words. Maybe it doesn't make much sense the way I say it.
Yes, it makes a great deal of sense. Don't worry about making money. It's much more important to worry about developing American citizens. School mastering's a fine and honorable profession. We'd be mighty proud to have you in the family.
Then it's all right, sir?
It's all right, son. Go find her and tell her you both have my blessing.
You were in the garden. You had on a white dress, and there was a blue ribbon in your hair, and your name was Juliet, and Heloise, and Helen, and you were my heart forever.
I shall be honored to be your wife.
Some words a man is proud about forever. Were my hours multiplied by years, I'd not forget them.
Oh, my dear, it seems that the whole world is ours now. You know something? I want 5 sons, and I want them all to look just like you.
Oh, Alice.
You know, I have to keep a very stern check on myself. I keep wanting to run up to people I've never seen before and say, I've found someone who has the kind of smile that goes straight to your heart, and the kind of eyes that you get lost in, and the kind of arms that can shut out the whole world or gather it in. And he's in love with me, Alice Adams of Canterbury, Connecticut. Tell everyone you see about it, won't you? Because I want the whole world to know.
No, my darling, I love you so much. So very much. Alice. At first, we never talked about the war, though it grew more bitter and more deadly each passing day we tried to keep it away from our own small heaven. But at last the cannons were so loud that we could not face realities and turn our backs on dreams. Remember when I told you I was leaving? We climbed a hill, and the stars were brighter than any stars had a right to be, but for the first time, we had no heart for stars.
You're going to be a spy.
That's what it comes down to.
Oh, darling, no. No, I don't want you to do it. I want you to stay here safe with me.
Darling, there's no safety anywhere when one nation aims its guns at another nation's liberty. Liberty must be defended to the death or not at all. It's conquer or be conquered in a case like this, Alice, and if we are conquered, we lose everything.
Those things are more important to you than I am?
Yes, because they're more important than myself. This America and what it stands for, living, worshiping, thinking in the ways we choose. Don't you understand, my darling?
I couldn't love you and not understand. It doesn't help. When you leave, the rest of my life goes with you. You will leave my heart bare when you go. Every cannon shot will blaze across it. And every time I read or hear of death, I'll die a little, not knowing whether you still live. Oh, darling, freedom and liberty are only words to me, but you are my life.
They're only words at this moment, Alice. Because we are young and life is very sweet and we have great plans for it. But none of the plans can add up to happiness unless those words do have meaning. No one wants to leave his home and loved ones. But Americans will always do it when something American is at stake. I must leave you now, Alice.
I'm sorry, dear. I'm really very proud of you. You know that.
Goodbye, Alice.
Goodbye.
You stared at me a moment, your head back against the wind, and then you turned and ran down the hill into the darkness, running inevitably and finally away from me. I stood there alone, and it was very cold on the hilltop, and darkness stretched on all sides of me. That was our farewell, that moment on the hill. And yet remember this, there will be promises and lips again for you, but my heart will know only your image through all eternity. And so, goodbye, my darling.
He rose restlessly. The stars were already fading. Dawn was an eternal thing, too close at hand. He must start the third letter.
My dear General, to have failed you is the greatest sorrow of my life. You know how much I wanted to succeed. I would have followed you anywhere. That hour I looked in your eyes and looked at history.
Your record is admirable, Captain, but you're so very young. I wish you weren't so young.
I shall serve you the better for it, sir, I promise you.
It's not an easy thing to ask a man to do. There is no compensation that is worth the risks you must take, except the knowledge that you have served your country in a desperate need. I cannot let you go without telling you that.
Let me start as soon as possible, sir.
You can start at once. Now then, I will give you your instructions. You will disguise yourself as a Dutch schoolteacher and make your way as soon as possible.
I was betrayed by one who recognized my disguise. You already know the details of that. They found our papers. I was brought here to enemy headquarters, branded traitor and condemned to die. They said the usual things.
Too bad that you saw fit to fight for a lost cause. For a young man with a fine mind, you might have had a brilliant future. There is a way you can redeem your life if you like. You have only to lead us to your headquarters.
You're wasting your time.
You're wasting your life. You surely are not foolish enough to think our country stands a chance of winning.
We stand more than a chance. We're going to win. Don't forget, you're trying to conquer a frontier people. We climbed the hills and took the plains behind them. We reached into the soil with naked fists and wrested a living from the earth and rocks. We set our homes upon the land, and we will fight to keep those homes. There will be no oppression, no regimentation, no curtailing of rights in America. Our children will grow to manhood under a free flag, and their children after them. We will kindle a fire of freedom that will blaze forever. I will die, and perhaps thousands like me. But America will keep her flag in the wind and her pledge of freedom with it. My dear General, before you read this, I shall have paid the price of failure. But even before you read it, someone else will have picked up where I left off. They'll never defeat us. There is no defeat for those who fight for honor.
Three letters there were. The first signed,
Your Devoted Son.
The second,
Your Own Nathan.
The third,
Respectfully, Nathan Hale.
Already the sun was slanting through the bars. Already there were footsteps in the corridor. The key in the heavy lock, the door grating open. And then the last voice he would ever hear beckoned him into silence.
Are you ready, Captain?
Yes.
One moment before the final moment for words that would ring down the centuries.
I only regret that I have but one life to lose for my country. Nathan Hale died in New York City 169 years ago this week, a 20-year-old schoolteacher with an unshakable faith in America and democracy. He died facing west, facing a western wilderness of river and mountain and plain that was to become a nation that spanned two oceans. He died facing west, facing the first train, the first automobile, the first airplane. He died facing west, facing Gettysburg and Pearl Harbor, Guam and Corregidor, and Iwo Jima, facing battlefields and outposts that were to be branded into American history, Bataan and Wake and Okinawa, where many more would sleep, who would also give that one life in defense of country. There are no words big enough to express what should be said to the grocery clerk from San Francisco, the doctor from Peoria, the lawyer from Spokane, the schoolteacher from Coventry, Connecticut. No words. Only a solemn gratitude for the knowledge that we can say, I am an American, only because they died to give us the right to say it.
Those were the last letters and words of Nathan Hale, patriot and lover of freedom. Our thanks to Joseph Cotton for a truly inspiring performance.
The Globe Theater, on Tuned to Yesterday, from September 18, 1945. Wrapping up this hour of true history on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for tuning in.